A matter of luck. A program dedicated to the greatest inventor and scientific discoverer the world has known, Lady Luck. And bringing you, in one complete 30-minute presentation, two authentic and true stories of remarkable scientific achievement. Tonight we tell you of Rudolf Diesel and Joseph May, and how each became famous through a matter of luck. Rudolf Diesel and a matter of luck. This is a story of mixed luck, of good and bad. And to tell it, we shall first start almost at the end, on a day in the year 1913, when a very angry man stood in an office of the Admiralty in Berlin's Wilhelmstrasse and shouted, actually shouted, at a high official.
You say you want my engines. Well, be definite. How many do you want? When do you want them? Give me a contract. I have the plant, the men, the equipment, and the materials for a large order, and I can start right away. For 2 years I have been ready, waiting for you people to make up your minds. I cannot waste time any further.
There are certain tests, my dear Diesel.
Tests? My engine has passed its tests. You know it's the best of its kind in the world. You yourself have told me it's ideal for installation in our submarines. Now you say test.
But surely you must realize that it's a big decision to put all our eggs in one basket for our submarine engine. And we must proceed.
All right, then. You have 1 week in which to make up your mind. If by today week no contract arrives, I shall consider myself free to sell my invention abroad.
What?
Rudolf Diesel was not a man to be trifled with. For years he'd been kicked around Germany by big business and officialdom, and he'd had enough. Rudolf Diesel, you see, had invented a revolutionary type of engine, and this is how he stumbled upon its secret, with two smiles from Lady Luck. In the year 1889, after completing postgraduate research at the Munich Polytechnic Institute, Diesel was working in Paris, manager of a firm making refrigerating machinery. A big job in those days for a young man of 31, and dreaming of inventing an engine which would be more efficient than any then known. One day, he was instructing a workman in the refrigerator factory when he set in chain a long series of important events.
Come here, Jacques. Now, here's what I want you to do. Do you understand what is happening here?
Not completely, monsieur.
Very well, then, pay attention. This machine here is a compressor, pumping air under high pressure into the air bottle.
This screw of cylinders, monsieur?
Yes. Now, before you, you see a master gauge showing what pressure is contained within the cylinders. Is that understood?
Yes, I understand.
You will watch the gauge, and when it says 30 kilograms to the square centimeter, you will open the valve, not enough to let out all our compressed air, but just enough to keep the pressure at 30 kilos.
30 kilos, monsieur.
That is right. Take care the pressure does not rise beyond, or we run the risk of an explosion.
I will take care, monsieur. 30 kilos. 30 kilos.
Now take another letter, if you please. Herr Gustav von Beulen and Halbach. 32 Friedrichstrasse, Berlin.
Mr. Diesel! Mr. Diesel!
Now what is it? What would I give for 10 good German mechanics instead of these infernal Frenchmen?
Come quickly, monsieur. But quickly.
What is the matter?
The cylinder pressure, monsieur, it rises. Already it has ascended to 40 kilos of pressure.
Then do as I told you. Open the valve.
But I cannot. The valve, the little wheel, she is stuck fast. She will not move.
All right, then. I shall attend to it. Hurry and find me spanners. Now hold fast. Grasp the spanner and pull with all your strength while I tap. Ready? Pull harder. Do you want the pressure to rise until our cylinder bursts and blows us both to perdition? Harder, man, harder.
I pull with all my strength, monsieur.
Then brace yourself. Put your other arm about the cylinder. Now.
Oh!
What is it?
I am burnt, monsieur.
Don't confound your burns. Hold that cylinder. There is the valve freed, but all our air escaping. Never mind, it is better than an explosion.
But my arm, monsieur,
Come, it cannot be so bad. Let me see. But it is. That is a bad burn, Jacques. I had no idea. I had no idea the compressed air would be hot enough to burn you. It must have been almost red hot. Hot enough to set the shop on fire. Yes. Hot enough to ignite a fuel, perhaps. Yes, indeed.
From the mechanic being accidentally burned against the cylinder of compressed air came Rudolf Diesel's first glimpse of the principle on which his dreamed about engine might work. It is a physical fact that when air is compressed, its temperature rises. The greater the pressure, the greater the heat. And this was the foundation of his new idea.
Suppose a piston were made to work in a cylinder closed at one end, so that as it moved, it compressed the air trapped within the closed end. This air would be tremendously heated. And if, at the precise instant, a fuel were injected, it would burn and thrust the piston down the cylinder with great power. Ah, but the fuel...
Yes, what was he to use for fuel in this revolutionary engine? He learned by another matter of luck at a fashionable reception given in a Paris salon.
Ah, my dear Rudolf, how correct, how German you look tonight.
I trust you approve, Duchess. It is the duty of every good German to be correct.
In all things?
Of course, in all things. Why?
Oh, I was just thinking of that little war we so recently had, your country and mine.
Madame, what is finished, and this is the year 1889. Surely 14 years is long enough to forget him.
Yes, of course it is, and I am a wretched hostess to chide you with it.
If there is one thing quite certain, it is that France and Germany have quarreled their last quarrel. Never again will we be at war.
Dear me, I hope you are right. Oh, now let us forget such serious matters. Come and meet some of the other guests. Monsieur Chambray.
Ah, Duchess.
May I present the so distinguished engineer, Herr Rudolf Diesel.
A pleasure, Herr Diesel. I am about to take a cigar on the terrace. You will join me?
I should be delighted, Monsieur Chambray.
The terrace is pleasantly cool after the heat inside. May I offer you a light?
Thank you. What is that? That device you have there.
This? Oh, that's a trinket I had given me. A cigar lighter.
Yes, but how does it work?
My dear Diesel, I haven't the faintest idea.
May I see it?
Well, of course. Here.
A little cylinder with a piston inside. You press the plunger.
Ah, of course. The air inside is compressed. It heats. A fuel ignites. We have a flame.
Monsieur Chambray, what is the fuel you burn in this?
Oh, something I get from an apothecary in the Rue de Vache.
The smell is familiar. Paraffin, maybe? No, but some volatile derivative of petroleum, that I'll swear. Monsieur Chambray, I must leave at once.
You leave? Oh, but why?
You have made a remarkable discovery for me, Chambray, and I cannot waste a moment to act upon it. Please give my apologies to our hostess.
The cigar lighter had given Diesel the clue he needed for his fuel. Crude oil was what he wanted, and the next 4 years were spent in research, experiments, and analysis. Then, in 1893, he applied for a patent on his first but as yet unbuilt diesel engine, and published a book describing its theory, only to find that he was scoffed at and derided on every side. On every side, that was, but one. That one was the firm of Krupps. They invited Diesel to join their staff, to use their facilities. And joyful of the recognition, Diesel agreed. He set to work and built his engine. It ran like a watch. And then a few months later, Rudolf Diesel began to smell a rat, large and odoriferous.
May I speak to you, Herr Krupps?
Certainly, Herr Diesel. What is troubling you?
The patent for my engine.
Oh, but what is there to worry about?
I have received no papers. As you know, I applied for this patent last year, and when I joined this firm, your office promised to look after all the legal formalities. But nothing so far has happened. Surely if a patent is being issued in my name, there should
be... In your name, Herr Diesel? Surely there must be some mistake.
What do you mean, mistake?
The patent for your engine is progressing satisfactorily, but surely when you ask that it be patented in your name, you are perhaps forgetful of the facilities granted you by this firm?
I do not understand. It is my engine, is it not?
My dear Herr Diesel, let us be clear. You made some theoretical investigations into the use of crude oil. Krupps offered you facilities for continuing your investigation as a servant of the company, which you accepted. As a result of the facilities given you, the materials, the workmen, the laboratory, you designed a nice new little engine, which, of course, is being patented under the name of Krupps.
You have patented it as a Krupps engine?
Well, of course. Who else's name?
But that is robbery.
Of course, you as designer will get a royalty, a percentage of the profits.
Herr Krupps, I shall sue you in the court.
You will lose against Krupps.
Maybe I will. But if I do, I can still beat you. Patent this engine, sell it, reap all the profits, and I shall still beat you.
Oh, how?
By designing another engine, better than that one that you have stolen. That is how, Herr Krupps.
Diesel left the firm of Krupps and labored hard and long on an improved engine. 10 years later, when the patent on the first diesel engine, held by Krupps, ran out, he was ready and immediately offered for sale the new diesel engine. It was a sensation. He offered it to the German Admiralty. Krupps were interested in getting that contract with the old engine. Krupps were powerful. Frederick Alfred Krupps was a member of the Reichstag. The Admiralty stalled, with the result that in 1913, Rudolf Diesel issued his ultimatum.
If by today week no contract arrives, I shall consider myself free to sell my invention abroad.
To a nation plotting war, this was disastrous news. The contract did not arrive. Diesel acted. In England, the British Diesel Company was formed. Diesel prepared to leave for England, taking with him the secrets of the sensational engine.
I am sorry to leave Germany, but I have my own rights to consider. I am not satisfied with the honesty, sincerity, or patriotism of German statesmen or German businessmen. I sail on Sunday night from Antwerp for England.
Accompanied by two colleagues from a French firm interested in his engine, Monsieur Georges Carrels and Monsieur Luckmann, Rudolf Diesel boarded the SS Dresden at Antwerp on the Sunday night as planned. She was due at Harwich next morning. But when she arrived...
I'm sorry to have to announce that sometime last night or this morning, one of the passengers, Herr Rudolf Diesel, was lost at sea. A search of the ship failed to reveal any sign of him, and in view of the calm weather, it must be presumed that he committed suicide.
A month later, the dripping, lifeless body of Rudolf Diesel was hauled aboard a Dutch fishing boat at the mouth of the Eskant River in the Skeld estuary. And so, bad luck came to Rudolf Diesel. But at least, he had had the supreme happiness of knowing that he had given the world a miraculous new engine, which to this very day, as it should, bears his name. But as you have heard, Rudolf Diesel's invention was due to two things: a workman's burnt arm and a guest at a party with a cigar-lighting gadget. Those two things put together show that the invention of the diesel engine was not so much a matter of intent as another matter of luck.
In just 1 minute, we shall tell you our second fascinating story, that of Joseph May. In the meantime, You'll be interested to hear this.
Back now to our narrator and cast for the second unusual but true story in our program, A Matter of Luck.
Joseph May and A Matter of Luck. In a certain sense, it is true to say that a radiogramophone is an electronic voice, a microphone and electronic ear, and the devices used in certain factories to detect the presence of poisonous vapors could be described as electronic noses. But there is still another modern miracle which duplicates another human sense, and its discovery was purely a matter of luck. It came about in an almost eerie way, and appropriately enough, it took place in Ireland, home of the fairies, the leprechauns, and the wee folk. In 1873, the engineer Cyrus Field had completed the laying of his transatlantic telegraph cable, whose European terminus was at Valencia, on Ireland's western coast. And one of the telegraph operators engaged at Valencia was Joseph May, a young man of more than ordinary intelligence, and as it happened, with an unusually keen sense of hearing. It was a bright sunny afternoon when the story begins, with May at work in the cable terminus.
Oh, good day to you, Joseph. Right in time I am. Oh, begorry, it's a hot day outside. It's good you pulled the blind down and kept the room cool for me. What's been happening on the cable, Joseph, my boy? Anything interesting?
Hold your tongue a minute, Pat, till I get this message down. Devil a mistake if I made this shift, and I don't want to spoil my record now. That's the end of it.
You're through for the day.
5 minutes to go.
I'll be off with you to your Colleen. What's 5 minutes more when a man's got to work all night? I'll take over now.
Oh, it's an appetite I have this night. And mutton and potatoes to be eaten by me fireside. Well, there's me key. And there's me seat. I've been keeping it warm for you.
And me with all night before me. Ah, well, good day to you, Joseph. And see you on time in the morning.
Have I ever been late?
Not since Michael O'Houlihan's wedding, you haven't.
Oh, Pat, now. By the by, I want you to listen for something when you're working tonight.
And what might that be?
Well, it's a sort of low humming. So low that I'm thinking I only imagine it. Then when it seems to have gone, there it is again.
Faith, it must be a pixie playing tricks on you, boy. I never hear a humming. Is it all night or all day or when?
Well, generally late in the afternoon when the sun gets down. I never hear it at night, but you might.
Oh, it's imagining things you are, Joseph. Now, away with you to your supper. Or it's waiting for you at the door, your Colleen will be, and a shillelagh in a hand.
Hey, more likely a cup and something to keep the coin out. Good night.
Good night to you. Humming's an easy, is it? Faith, and when he's been married as long as I have, he'll get more than humming's in his ears.
That night, Pat listened, but heard nothing but Morse. But Joseph May was certain about the humming, although no one else seemed to hear it but him. And as time went on, he determined to find what was the cause of it.
Weeks went by, and then when all his efforts to solve the mystery had failed, he began to worry, thinking that perhaps his ears were at fault, the ears he depended on for his livelihood. And his wife noticed that something was amiss.
What's the matter with you, Joseph May? Is he tired of me already, you are, and us not married a 12-month?
No, don't be silly, Mavourneen. What do you want to be thinking like that for?
Because for weeks now you come home from the cable station as if you had the cares of all Ireland on your shoulders.
Oh, yeah, then I'll tell you. I think maybe I'm sickening for something and have to be looking for different work.
And what might you be sickening for? I never saw a man better fed, nor looking healthier for matter of that.
Well, every afternoon I hear an intermittent humming noise. Patrick and the others swear I imagine it, but there it is.
Every afternoon?
Well, no. Me desk's nearest the window where the sun shines in. That's where I hear it most. If the sun isn't shining, I don't hear a thing. But away go the clouds, and there's me humming again.
Oh, it's worrying about nothing you are, Joseph. Faith, anyone would hear noises if they had to listen to the cable all day.
But I tell you, Mavourneen, I'm the only one it happens to, and it never happens in the morning. Just late in the afternoon.
I wonder if it's your eyes that are giving you trouble. The glare from the sun might upset your eyes and give you a buzzing in the ears.
No, I'm sure it's something else. Something in the equipment.
Well, don't worry any more about it tonight.
All right, Mavourneen. No more tonight. Faith, I hope I don't have to leave the cable office. I like it there.
I know you do.
I can never forget the wonder of it. There sits a man in New York, tapping out messages with a key, while I sit listening 3,000 miles away, yet as close as if you were in the next room.
Sure. It's a wonderful thing, the cable.
Not as wonderful as the things we'll be seeing someday. One day, mark my words, Mavourneen, one day we'll transmit pictures instead of words, instead of sounds. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Oh, it's making fun of me, you are, Joseph. Send pictures along a wire? Oh, away with you.
Well, it wouldn't be so difficult if we could find out how to make light vary a current. If we could turn variations of light into variations in electricity, it could be done.
Now it's mysteries you're talking that I don't understand. If your ears buzz all day, it's more rest you need, and so to bed with you. And tomorrow stop your worrying and let the buzzing look after itself.
And so, as time went on, Joseph May began to take the humming for granted. His hearing remained normal, and his health was perfect. So he concluded that either his imagination was playing him tricks, or else there was some fault in his receiving equipment that he could not find. Then, on a particularly sunny day in midsummer, luck played into his hands, and he knew at last that one of his cable instruments was at fault.
Oh, it's me coat I'm taking off, Patrick, before I cook with the heat. Oh, never did I see the sun of old Ireland beat down like this.
Then when you've pulled off your coat, you can pull down the blind a little to keep some of it out till sunset.
That's just the thing I'll be doing. There. Is that better for you?
Aye, that's better. Except for the bit with a hole in it.
No. You know, I'll just move some of this equipment and give myself a bit more room. There. Here, me lad, you sit over there.
What is it you're doing with your resistor? That's a delicate instrument, Joseph, and not to be pushed about like that.
I'm taking care, Patrick. Give it a bit of harm if I don't... Patrick! Patrick, listen!
And now what's got into you? Is it the humming you're hearing again?
Thank God, that's just what it is. Do you tell me you cannot hear it? Come here and listen.
Faith. Is the humming all right?
I can't use the receiver like that. The humming will drown me signals.
Then I'll help you connect a spare one. Then we'll pull this one to pieces and find what's wrong. Well, my boy, there before us lies a complete receiver, perfect in every way. Will you tell me what's the matter with it?
Faith, I've tested it piece by piece. Devil a thing is wrong. Yeah, we put it together again and it works as good as new. Yeah, it must be bewitched by the wee folk.
Joseph May lay awake all that night, tossing and turning as the mystery of the humming code receiver went back and forth in his mind. Then he came to a decision, and he could hardly wait to see his friend Patrick at work the following afternoon.
Hey, Patrick, here's what we're going to do. We're going to arrange everything as it was when the humming started last night at exactly the same time, and see what happens.
Well, just as you say, my boy, but I don't see the sense of it myself. Now, where were we? resistor was here, and the key plate was here.
No, I moved the resistor, don't you remember?
No, sure, sure, I remember. It was right here after you took your coat off.
That's right. And that was there. Now then, let's have a look. Ah, the blind. We had the blind drawn very down. Now then, that's exactly how it was. Oh, but there's no humming.
You haven't switched on the receiver.
What? Oh, the devil, I haven't. Here.
By the hills of Denimora. What's that? The instrument is perfect, but the humming goes on. What is the matter with it?
Now it's stopped.
What did you do?
Oh, I didn't do anything.
Well, move your hand out of the light so I can see the thing properly.
Patrick! Patrick O'Shaughnessy, do you know what it is? It hums when the sun shines on it through that hole in the blind. Look! I move my hand so the sun shines on it. It starts. Cut off the sunbeam from the window, it stops. Whatever that resistor is coated with reacts electronically to sunlight. Ah, I've made a discovery. A marvelous discovery. That's why my instrument is the only one to buzz. It was the only one in the sunbeams in the window. And you know what it is on that resistor? It's selenium.
Joseph May, without even knowing what he was looking for, had discovered the principle of the selenium, or photoelectric cell. The uncanny little instrument that governs the flow of current in proportion to the amount of light that falls upon it, and which is used in 100 ways to perform the duties of an electric eye. Television, that most modern of miracles, depends upon it. And it can be made to do 1,000 things, from counting traffic to opening the door of a millionaire's garage as his car approaches. But Joseph May's discovery was pure luck. His code receiver was coated with selenium, and his desk was beside the window. He pulled down the blind and moved his resistor straight into the beam of sunlight coming through the hole in the blind. Other inventors seized on his discovery and made much of it. But of all discoveries, May's was the least a matter of intent. It was purely a matter of luck.
The two authentic stories of the discovery of the photoelectric cell and the diesel engine were dramatized by Lindsay J. Hardy from Factual Research Material and were directed by Donovan Joyce. The performers included Richard Ashley, Leonard Teal, Kevin Brennan, Brenda Harvey, Harvey Adams, Grant Taylor, Irene Harper, John O'Malley, and David Lowe. Your narrator was Ward Leopold, who invites you to listen again 1 week from now, same night, time and station, for a further fascinating half hour of A Matter of Luck, a Donovan Joyce production.